Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am your host, Corey Fleck. Well, your host for the first hour. In the first half of this first hour, we're going to discuss more markets and some of the data. And then in the second half, move over to the resource sector. It's been another very interesting week, especially for those precious metals bulls, as the gold price has continued to climb, even in the face of a dollar that was stabilizing. I'm kicking off this weekend show with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I recommend checking out on a daily basis. And Mark, let's focus on the US dollar, but also with some of the data and news that we are going to see next week. First and foremost, the Fed meeting. The expectations are for, again, the Fed to remain paused, but that means in 6 weeks in July. I think rate cut odds are over 80% right now for that July meeting. But as for next week and in terms of how the dollar might react, what are you seeing coming from this Fed meeting?
Sure. So, you know, it's true that after those weaker than expected jobs data last Friday, the 7th, we had some softer CPI data. But the dollar really traded higher throughout the week, finishing near its highs for the week after we had stronger than expected retail sales. So going into next week, what that strong retail sales data meant was that the market was beginning to creep into a rate cut by the Federal Reserve on this week, the 19th, 20th. And instead, the strength of the retail sales made the market take that back. That is, before the data, the market was pricing in about a 1 in 3 chance of a June cut here. And now it's less than 1 in, say, it's about a 1 in 7 chance, 1 in 8 chance. So the odds have really been cut back. But I think you're right. The market is looking for some kind of signal of a rate cut coming soon. I do think that what we should expect from the Federal Reserve is no sense of urgency, but they want to recognize and acknowledge that they have the tools in case they need to. And so you can talk about these cross currents again. But I think it's a little bit early for the Federal Reserve to give up its view that that the soft patch in inflation is transitory. It's a bit too early to say that when we still have full employment for all practical purposes, new cyclical lows in the underemployment rate. Retail sales today strong, and more importantly than just the May figure for retail sales is the upward revision in April, which means that the consumer is still fairly resilient. So no real urgency from the Fed. But I think that they'll acknowledge that they're prepared to act if needed, and maybe in a more like strongly stated in a way that they haven't yet. So I think that's what we can most hope from the Federal Reserve. They will give us new forecasts. Q1 growth surprise on the upside. Growth in Q2 might be on the downside. That is below trend. So it really depends on Q3 data, I think, to see whether the Fed cuts. And I think July is still a bit early. If I was going to pencil in a Fed cut, I'd put it in September.
Okay. Well, that's something to keep an eye on. I also am a bit skeptical just how much the market has already priced in this July meeting and potential cut. Again, a lot can happen within that time. And you know what? You are right. The Fed is, I think, going to mention patience a lot and on pause, but they already have started to address some of the tools in some of the meetings that they've had or press conferences regarding what they could be doing. Now, again, in the eyes of the dollar has continued this general uptrend. However, the general momentum of this uptrend has definitely waned, especially from 2018, 2019. It's a slow grinding uptrend. And as much as I think some people want to become dollar bears, we need to look at what's going on over in Europe. Next week, we're going to get the flash PMI in the Eurozone. Well, how do you think this could affect the overall dollar moves and still this momentum to the upside?
Yeah, so it's true, you know, that the euro had a bottom back in late May around 111. This week, we got up to a little bit more than 113, close to 113.5, and turned back here in the second half of the week, completely giving back the gains that the euro made last week on the back of the ECB meeting and the soft U.S. jobs data. finishing below the 20-day moving average for the first time this month. But I think that the outlook might be a little bit better if it can hold this general area, call it 111.80, 112. Because next week we're going to get the flash PMIs, not coming until the end of the week. But what this should show us is that there has been a gradual recovery in the Eurozone. I mean, I know pessimism is very widespread, and there are a lot of risks out there. Brexit, trade tensions with the U.S., slowing down of China, all things that are near the surface. But we've seen, like, for example, the composite PMI for the Eurozone bottom in January, February, just below 51. And with a little bit of luck, it'll be near 52 when it gets reported for June at the end of the week ahead of us. And you can see this as well in the service sector. The manufacturing sector in Europe is still weak. It's been below the 50 boom bust level since January. And it's likely to remain below there for another month or two, but slowly climbing back. It looks like it bottomed in March. So we're only a couple months into the bottom, but it does look like I say, it does look like it's bottomed. We need a couple of more months to have some confirmation of that. But the key really is the composite has turned up. This would be here in June would be the third month in a row.
Now, wouldn't that surprise the markets, don't you think, is if we start to see Europe start to recover? Because I think a lot of the expectations were that the U.S. market would falter and almost play catch-up on the downside to Europe.
Yeah, I think it would surprise people because I think the pessimism is so widespread. There still are. I mean, I don't want to play down the cross currents in Europe with Brexit. You know, the Italy and the EU are going to have a confrontation soon, early as next week over some excessive debt from last year. There's many people are concerned about that. We've got still political situation in many countries is unsettled. You have the new EC hasn't been named yet. Draghi's term at the ECB is over later this year, and so the contest for his replacement. So there's a lot of like balls in the air, so to speak. And I think that the market is pessimistic about Europe, and I think it's a bit exaggerated. I think we might have seen the worst of it.
Okay, and that could all lead to a bit of a pullback in the U.S. dollar. How about trade, though? We have this G20 meeting coming up, and there's still just a general lack of clarity, which seems to be the trend for these trade discussions. But now just a lack of clarity is even if President Trump and President Xi are going to meet. How do you think the G20 meeting, which is on tap for later this month, is going to impact the currency markets?
Yes, I think that next week, that's what we're going to be doing a lot of, the market trying to position for this. It's a big event risk. As we sit here today, there still has not been confirmation that Trump and Xi are going to meet. Trump has threatened Xi, if he does not meet, that he'll go forward with the tariffs. And he's already threatened to do so. And he said that he's threatened to move them to more than 25%. I think it puts the Chinese in a difficult position. If, say for example, President Xi was going to visit Trump, going to accept his invitation. Now that Trump has made a threat about it, it puts him in a more difficult position because now it would be seen that he's been cowed by Trump's threats. Also, in my work, I sort of wonder if this is a forum that sort of like suits Trump better than Xi, in the sense that a bit impromptu, a bit non-scripted. It seems that as a reality TV star, Trump is very good at those unscripted moments, while President Xi might not be as good and comfortable in that kind of situation. And also aware of Trump's flair for the drama, walking out of meetings. And this would be a huge loss of faith and an embarrassment if something like that happened to President Xi. And so I don't know if that's a risk that the Chinese want to take. And I think that it's clearer now that there is a bipartisan consensus that wants to challenge China in the United States, and that a tariff hike on China is different than the tariff threats he makes against Canada or Mexico or Europe. I think many Americans, I think, are in favor of, and a U.S. Democrat congressional leader seem to be in favor of a very tough line to China. You see this as well on the opposition to this extradition bill that Hong Kong is considering passing that will allow people, including foreigners, in Hong Kong to be extradited to China if they break a Chinese law. And so I think that President Xi probably is assuming that the U.S. tariffs threat that Trump is hikes that Trump is threatening will go into effect. And if they don't go into effect now, there'll be another pretense to use them later on to continue to try to blackmail China into doing what the U.S. wants, including things, stop buying Iranian oil, for example. And so, yes, I'm not very optimistic on the trade front. And I'm in the camp that says there probably won't be a meeting between Trump and Xi. And I think that would be an injection of volatility to the markets. People would mean slowing of the economies, which keeps the bond market bulls in the driver's seat.
Okay, so kind of a continuation of the trend, at least in terms of bonds, but how about the dollar? Does the dollar get hit on the back of this? And also the U.S. markets. Would the U.S. markets take it on the chin? Because in all fairness, when we have seen this type of uncertainty with trade, markets have reacted a bit differently recently.
Yeah, I think that if there's no agreement, and President Trump throws a bit of a tariff tantrum, and he announces immediately new tariffs on China that will go into effect 25% on all their goods. Remember, so far, a lot of those goods that have been tariffed by the U.S. are not the consumer goods, like cell phones and laptops and computers. It's much more capital equipment and intermediary goods. So this would be this step from Trump would be quite large. And there's other things, too, you know, with this with Hong Kong, for example. As you know, Hong Kong has special privileges. It's not treated in U.S. trade law like other Chinese cities, which means that the tariff that the U.S. is applying on China does not apply to Hong Kong. But there are some in Congress who think it ought to, that China is slowly eroding Hong Kong's autonomy, and therefore it should be treated like a Chinese city.
Okay, so then where does this all leave investors? It sounds like there's still a lot of uncertainty, indecision in the markets. And if the Fed does manage to push back rate cuts, then we're kind of stuck in a slow growth, almost news-dependent market, aren't we?
Yeah, so in my work, I sort of see the dollar sort of forging a top here, a big top, long-term top against the major currencies. I sort of think of it as three factors. One is the policy mix in the U.S. has shifted from a loose fiscal policy, tax cuts, and tighter monetary policy, four Fed rate hikes last year, to the exact opposite. The tariff increases, the winding down of the fiscal stimulus makes us into a tighter fiscal position, while monetary policy seems to be on the verge of easing. Secondly, in my work, I find that the last phase of a big dollar rally is when interest rate differentials move against it. That's happening now. It's not just like in the last couple of weeks, but since November, the U.S. interest rate premium over Europe, the Eurozone, and over the U.K. has narrowed. Same thing with Japan. Now, the interest rate differential with the U.S. and Canada peaked earlier, and it's about half of what it was at its peak. And so I think that those two factors, shifting policy mix, these late cycle indicators, and then the third factor I would point out is that Trump is right that when he said recently that the euro was undervalued. The truth of the matter is that most of the major currencies are undervalued against the dollar, with the exceptions of the Japanese yen and it's the Norwegian krone. And the Danish krone as well. And so the euro, though, what attracts me about the euro is that according to the OECD's model of purchasing power parity, the euro is the most undervalued of the major currencies, a little bit more than 22% undervalued. And so it seems to me that that rubber band that connects value, PPP, and current prices can stretch. It's already, like I say, about 23%, a little bit more than 22% for the euro. It doesn't really stretch much beyond 25%. So I'm seeing the dollar overvalued against most currencies, interest rate differentials moving against it as the policy mix turns less supportive. This does not mean that the dollar can't strengthen a bit further. We've had several tests in late April through May near 111. Today we're still trading a little bit above 112. Even if we go back down to 111, even make a marginal new low, I think that in a year from now, we're going to be looking at a sharply lower dollar. By sharply lower, let me try to quantify that to say something around 5% or so.
Okay. Hey, very interesting comments there, Mark. And you have outlined, I think, a scenario here where the dollar easily could weaken. As I said, the momentum of this uptrend has waned a bit this year. And hey, there are still reasons for maybe this to continue for a little bit longer. But longer term, that dollar pullback, very much on the table. Hey, Mark, great having you on the show. I appreciate all of your time. And I also appreciate your blog, again, Mark2Market. Mark, thanks for your time. Everybody stick around. I'm going to be right back with Jesse Felder.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.